Hey, Technically Female Tribe, it's Jasmine here for another episode of Technically Female Podcast. Happy Wednesday. I hope everyone had a great 4th of July weekend. And today I have a special guest, Christian Brown. She is currently a broad advocate analyst at Home Depot and actually has a background in mathematics. Like, that's not something that's usually a thing. So, hey, Christian, how are you?
I'm good. How are you today?
I am just living and surviving and grateful for the long weekend. That is for
yes,
sure.
Definitely.
For sure. I'm so excited to have you today on my podcast. And so I wanted to start off by just getting to know, like, who are you and how did you get involved in the work that you do now and math of all things? I want to hear all the details.
Yeah, so that's a loaded question. When people hear about why I majored in math, they look at me like, are you serious?
So, I have algebra one, so I get it all the time. Like, you're weird. I'm like, no, it's just great.
Yeah, when I got to, in high school and middle school, math was never my best subject. I always liked it the most, but I was a little afraid to like it because I had a math tutor throughout middle school and high school.
Oh, yeah.
So saying, I have a tutor, but I like math kind of like doesn't work really well with a bunch of high schoolers.
Oh, for sure.
So I got to college, and I first got to college as a business major, and I didn't really know what I wanted to do, didn't know what I wanted to major in. I was like, business is cool, business is safe, no matter what, we're always going to have businesses, so that seems like that's what I should do.
Mm-hmm.
And the first college course I sat in was a pre-calculus class.
Ooh, cal, and, gotta love it.
Yeah, and the professor, she was like, you know, you're really good at this. You should major in math. And I was sitting there like, what? Never in my life has anyone ever told me that I was good at math. So I went to her office and I talked to her for a little bit. And she was like, what? You should definitely change your major in math. What's your login? And she like logged in the computer and everything. And she changed my major to math. And she said, if you don't like it, you'll change it back.
Oh,
and
wow.
4 years later, I never changed it back. So I guess that meant I liked it.
Needed a little push, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's how I became a math major, not really the conventional route, but.
Yeah, no, I get it. And, you know, sometimes I think a lot of times we don't have those resources that kind of just push us and to be confident in what we're really skilled at. So I'm so glad that she pushed you there. And so you studied math, and then what did you do after you got your degree in applied mathematics?
So I actually just got my degree less than a month ago.
Oh, awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you. So I did some research projects, some internships during college, and I kind of sat there and was trying to come up with what I wanted to do. And I wanted to do something involving math, of course, but I also picked up a minor in marketing while I was in school and got involved a little bit in the business route that I had planned on taking. So I landed in the role that I'm in now because it seems like a good way for me to combine everything that I love. I like business marketing, so there's a little bit of that involved in my job. There's math involved because of the analyst part. And also, I like to shop, and Home Depot's a big retailer. So got to combine everything.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, who doesn't? Math, shopping. Oh, sign me up. And so I know you mentioned you were kind of pushed into studying applied mathematics. And where did they kind of tell you your major could take you? Was it provided to you as an ideal career path? Where the path you took, or how did you kind of navigate your way to where to go? Did they give you suggestions in the university you were at, or how did you determine your next steps?
So actually, when you major in applied math, everyone just kind of assumes on the university level and outside of the university level that you want to go into academia in some capacity. Mm. And I think that the university was definitely driving everyone in the applied, well, not, let me be specific, driving women in the applied math space towards academia.
Mm.
I was in a woman in math program at the school with a bunch of women students at the school in math, and the advisor actually told us, she was like, yeah, you guys are going to go into academia, you're going to be teachers. And when I said, well, what if we want to go into the corporate space, she was kind of like, well, corporate will spit you up and get rid of you as soon as someone better comes in.
Wow.
So it's kind of like, this woman is leading women in math at the university, a whole club, and she's leading it, and she doesn't think that we're capable of going into corporate America.
Wow.
Wow. So that was kind of interesting. I also had another professor who was a woman tell me, she said, you know, the applied mathematics track is a lot more difficult than the early education math track. Why don't you just switch to that one if you're going to become a teacher? And I was sitting there in the back of my mind, like, who told you I was going to become a teacher? So not that I have a problem with teachers. I absolutely love teachers. A professor is the reason why I got into math. I think it's such an important field and teachers are definitely undervalued and appreciated.
For sure.
But I also don't think that it's right that on that university level that me being a woman in math was automatically pushed towards academia.
Yeah, no, that's not cool. It's crazy you say that because I had the like opposite thing. So I was in computer engineering. I started in computer and ended up getting computer and electrical. And I had the same issue or the same, you know, experience where my advisor said, you know, you're really good at math. I don't think you're going to be able to complete engineering. Like my first semester, she's like, I think you should just change your major to math. And I was, to your point, it's like you go to advisor, you're like what, how old are you? I guess you're like 18, 19 years old and you're expecting like to be empowered, you're expecting to be encouraged on, you know, how to navigate through a whole new world of college. And it's a lot of information that can be spoken over your life that can completely change the trajectory of what you're trying to do. And it's funny you say that about being a teacher because I shared on my first episode of my podcast, like my end goal, like retirement is obviously to be fabulous, but to be an algebra one teacher. Like everyone's like, what? Like who knows that type of stuff? Like I do, like I love algebra one, but like I also know I have to pay the bills right now. And this is not a knock on teachers. I think teachers are amazing. They're so undervalued. They're so underutilized and definitely underpaid. But I just knew for the things that I wanted to be able to do in my life, like I needed to kind of pivot into corporate. And it's crazy you say that about, you know, the expectation of, well, if you study math, you're a teacher, because quite often when I have been out, you know, in my personal life and, you know, been around people I have met before and I say kind of what my major is, or I don't say what my major is, they ask me, you know, what do you do? And I, you know, kind of get them to guess just playing around and they're like, oh, you're a teacher, right? And I'm just like, why is that the assumption that like that's all you can do with certain degrees or certain interests? So I 100% understand what you mean by that. And so, you know, I applaud you for not sticking to the status quo and being willing and persistent to try something new. So if your advisor was kind of telling you, you know, you probably, you know, you guys are going to be teachers, but you kind of broke the mold. How did you get yourself through that? Like, did you do your own research or how did you even put the two and two together with the role you do now?
Well, initially I was like, okay, I'm going to be a teacher. And I started talking to my male counterparts and listening to them and speaking with other people. And I realized that they weren't getting those same responses, that they weren't being pushed into academia. So that kind of set off a red flag in me, like, okay, what's going on here? What else can I do? And I worked on a research team in school. I actually was asked to participate on the team. It was a math, an applied mathematics team.
Oh, cool.
And I was asked to participate not because I was a major in math and so was everyone else on the team, but because I had a marketing minor. So at that moment, I kind of thought about, okay, marketing is something that's definitely needed in this math space. And then I started doing some research on combining math and marketing, marketing and analytics, business analytics, that sort of thing. And I kind of went into that realm and looking for jobs that would be fulfilling both of those.
Yeah, no, for sure. That's, like I said, that's really admirable that you kind of didn't listen to what was told to you, because I think so often we allow other people to impact what our future looks like. And, you know, honestly, you know, having a female, actually my advisor was female, so that's funny. She was female, but, you know, one of the strongest females I had that just always, you know, if there's everything, anything I ever learned, it was like, you do what makes you happy, what you're passionate about, and do it with 100% excellence. And that was my mom. She just really pushed me to like, don't let anyone else tell you what you're going to do. Like you do what's best for you and what you're interested in, and don't let anyone derail you. And so having, you know, a maternal figure that just really ingrained that in me stuck with me. So it was like, no matter who told me what, like my mom says I can do whatever I want. And I shouldn't allow anyone to talk me out of my dreams. So it's hard though, if you don't have that type of support system. And so I kind of want to talk a little about that. Who supported you when you were, you know, being able to make a bold decision like that?
So I have support coming from different angles. Neither one of my parents went to college, so they were kind of like, whatever you do, we're going to be proud of you. Take the traditional route, we're proud, whatever. Just do whatever you want to do, what makes you happy. And I also had a professor at my university who became kind of like a second advisor to me. And he definitely, he was really straight up with me. He was like, I have not had the opportunity to work with a lot of minority students. And I know that there's opportunities out there specifically for minorities. And when they come across my desk, I will pass them along to you.
Wow, that's awesome.
He definitely did that. And he encouraged me to get out there and get involved with things outside of the classroom, still with math, but outside of the classroom, build relationships, meeting people like that. He shares so many opportunities with me. I actually got funding for my research, NSF funding for my research because of him.
Oh, wow.
So there were so many things that he did for me because he knew that there were resources out there for a woman in math. He just said that he didn't have the opportunity to share them.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I didn't even know you did research. Man, you did research, you did math. I mean, you just did a whole bunch of things, and now you're doing marketing plus math. That's awesome. And I think you pulled a really good point of, like, there's a lot of resources that are accessible, but it's your visibility to those resources, right? And if you don't have an advocate, you know, vouching for you when you're around and when you're not around to provide you visibility to those resources, it can be a huge game changer, for sure.
Yeah. 100% agree.
Yeah. And so I know you mentioned, you know, you got your degree in applied mathematics. You went the route that combines marketing and math. What are some other areas outside of teaching that you have learned that women who get a math or mathematics degree can do in the real world? Like, what can you really do with a math degree? And I don't mean it like that, because I know the things, but I want to hear your perspective, since you kind of have the degree and have been exposed to some things.
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question, because I think we all know that math is involved in everything, like literally everything, but we don't take the time to sit there and think how math plays a role into specific things. And I think it's once you kind of sit back and think about, okay, how is math involved in this, 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 you'll begin to see more things that you can do with a math degree. Going back to my research, I actually did research on basketball. I worked with my school's basketball team. So that's something, like, as a woman in math, who thinks, okay, I'm getting a math degree, let me do sports analytics. Like, it's not something that typically is placed in front of you. I had to go searching for that. So I think that there's so many things out there that you can do, that the way to approach it isn't necessarily what can I do with a math degree. It's more so, what do I enjoy? What do I like to do? And then how is math involved in that?
Yeah, I love that. We talked about that a little bit on my episode last week, about finding what your passion is, and once you find your passion, like, really leaning into what that is. And so I'm a huge sports fan. Like, I'm really having a hard time that football may not be a thing this year. Pray for me, because I love football, but now I'm intrigued, and basketball is my second favorite sport, but football's like number one. But you mentioned a little bit about your research, and now I'm intrigued. Like, what did that look like? How did you put sports and math together? Like, what was your scope?
Yeah, so basically the school's basketball team kind of reached out to the math department and said, in the professional world, they're getting really deeply involved in analytics. Analytics is playing a way bigger role in professional sports than ever before, and colleges aren't really tapping into it yet. So they were like, the big schools are, of course. They were like, what can you all do? And that was it. They gave us no direction, nothing. So when I heard about it, I was like, oh, this is interesting. And I went online, and I think I spent more time researching than actually doing anything. And I spent months researching, what are professional sports teams doing with math? How are they using math to make decisions that they've never used math before in the sports realm? And I took some things that I saw that the NBA was doing, some things that the MLB was doing, actually, because they're like leading sports analytics.
Really?
And And I kind of tailored that to my school's basketball team and provided some analytics and some insights based off of what I found and how I could apply it to my team's stats and numbers and things like that. So it was a really cool experience. It was great.
That's awesome. I did not know that about the MLB, so I'm glad you taught me that. Yeah, no, I think analytics is such a big buzzword I think when I was in school, like, it wasn't a hot topic. It was like you just did math. And so I've soon found that I like analytics. I don't think I'm like could like do half the things that you do, but I think it's cool. And you brought up a good point about research. And I think a lot of times we, especially as women, are like, okay, I don't know what my next step is, or I have an idea of what the next step looks like, but really taking the time to do your research to really find what you're passionate about, what drives you, what motivates you, what encourages you, and taking that path versus, to your point earlier, of what's told to you that you have to do. And so think about if you had never really took the time to be persistent, do the research, and kind of broaden your horizon and your mindset of the things that you may be interested in to, you know, put your passions together.
Yeah, definitely. I think research brings exposure, and the best way to know what's out there and what you can do and what you're capable of is being exposed to the possibilities.
Yeah, for sure. I think so often people aren't exposed to things due to, you know, the background or the geographic location or the education system they're in, or as you mentioned earlier, the advocates they may or may not have. And honestly, Christian, that's one of the things that like breaks my heart the most, which is one of the reasons why I started this podcast, because even though I can't physically put you in certain programs, I want you to expose to different thoughts and different women in STEM so you can hear the stories and learn about like the world being your oyster and be encouraged to know that you can take a non-traditional route. But that exposure thing is so, so critical. And I think as a nation and as a world, we have to get better in exposing people to more opportunities, especially women in STEM, and especially minority women in STEM. Just getting that early exposure really, really helps shape the narrative of their life. And so when we think about, you know, being a woman who loves math, why do you think that's not quite a normalized thing in the society we live today? Why is that so still like faux pas, I guess that's what they call it. Like, why is that still a taboo thing?
I feel like during elementary, middle school, high school, my experiences have been reflected of people all around being like, I hate math, to the point where you'll go to a store and there will be a cashier who enters a number wrong. They'll be like, oh, I have to calculate this myself. I hate math. Mm. And I think that when you keep hearing, I hate math, I hate math, I hate math, it kind of molds how you are. You might not necessarily hate math, but you're kind of like, do I want to go out there and publicly say I don't hate math? Because that makes me different.
Yeah.
So I think that that has a lot to do with it. And especially that women occupy a challenging space as it is, especially in the STEM field. Mm-hmm. And when you just add all of those things together, it just makes it hard to kind of break through and be like, okay, I'm going to enter STEM even though I'm a woman. I'm going to pursue math even though I'm a woman. I'm going to go against the grain, go against what I've seen all my life.
Yeah, for sure. It's to your point, it's a lonely world out there, right? Like, I'm sure you didn't have many women in your advanced math courses. Did you have any? Did you have like a hand count on one hand probably? How many?
Yeah, definitely. You could count them on one hand. There was not a lot.
Yeah, and it's that I didn't think about it. It's that reinforcement of math being hard, math being difficult. Like, you have to be really smart to understand math. You have to be really smart to understand science. And then, gosh, think about engineering. Oh, you got to be a brainiac, right? So it's like it's almost like a reinforced mindset of what STEM is, whether you hear it from people in your network, your family members, it could be things like you said externally, like going to a retail store, or even just things that are on TV, right? It's like, oh, like anyone that pursues STEM or understands, you know, those areas have to be really smart, they have to work really hard, like, and you almost second guess yourself because you think you're inferior or you're incapable of, like, man, they look to be really, you know, smart people, and do I have what it takes to even be close to what they are, even like have the ability or capacity to learn all of those things? And I think there's a, to your point, a heightened pressure Whether that's something someone provides you or it's internally, it's a mindset thing of your mental, like, gosh, I have to, like, not only understand it, but I have to do better than most, you know, being a woman. And then I also have to, like, be able to not necessarily regurgitate, but, like, express it out loud intelligently in a way that people, A, believe that I know what I'm talking about, and B, actually understand if there's follow-up questions that may be off the rail of what I actually studied. So that's a really good point. Do you have hope that it'll ever be normalized, women loving math and women in STEM? Do you think it's kind of a lost cause, which I would love to hear your thoughts on that.
I do have hope that it will be normalized. I think it starts with those elementary school interactions, those interactions where getting a teacher who's passionate about it and who's saying, okay, this is math, it's involved in everything, and just kind of going from there. I also think it's important for our male counterparts to step in and voice their experiences with it and use that to help women along, not necessarily be like, well, there aren't that many women in this space anyway, or things like that. So I think it takes both. Both need to get involved in normalizing it. That woman can't do it alone.
Yeah, for sure. It's what we speak out loud over people. And I love the point you hit about it starts young. Like, I think a lot of times we think we can fix it once they're in middle school or high school or college. And it's like, by that time, they've pretty much started to mold what their brain is going to be and, like, what they're interested in. And it's hard to backtrack and fix, you know, certain experiences that have happened. And I also like the point you mentioned about men and how it's not just on female teachers or it's not just on, you know, parents, but it's also on, you know, men and male teachers and male advocates to, like, you know, call out skills that you see, call out to the students so that they know that they're excelling, right? And I think that's equivalent to what happens once you get into corporate or once you get into, you know, the real world. It's like you need more males to advocate for when they see talent or when they see a rock star or when they see, you know, something that you've done that's, you know, awesome, because so often it's silenced or it's, I mentioned in the podcast episode last week, it's you do something as a female and you give it to a male and then he presents it as his and it's like, whoa, 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 like, you know.
Yeah, I remember you saying that.
Like,
that's exactly what happened.
Well, I'm glad to, not glad here, it's still bad, but I'm glad it's like, I'm like, Bueller, am I the only one that's dealt with that before? And so it really calls for it to be not just a one-sided problem, but it's everyone's problem. Like, it's everyone's problem to fix. It's everyone's problem to talk it out and be solution-oriented and to really make a difference in the lives, because, you know, the life of a kid is so precious, and every portion of that can impact the child either positively or negatively. So it's really, really important. And so I want to also, you know, I feel like we're fighting the power on this podcast right now. But speaking of fighting the power and advocacy, you know, why do you feel like advocacy for women in math is so important? And, you know, I know you mentioned you know, just graduated and you're working in corporate, and how do you plan to be an advocate throughout your professional journey for women in math?
So the first one, talk about kind of why it's important. I think it's important because it's not done enough, which I know seems like it doesn't make sense. But when we think about women in math, you may think, okay, a woman has gone to college, she's gotten her degree in math, she made it, we got one, she's a woman in math. But that's so not true. It trails off. The percent of women getting undergraduate degrees in math is significantly larger than the percent getting PhDs and becoming doctoral faculty and tenure faculty and professors. Even though that's academia, the percentage of women trails off the farther along women kind of get up the pipeline, if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, I know, that makes sense.
So I think part of the reason why advocacy is so important is because there is no stopping point. It has to go on no matter what phase of the career or education that a woman is in when she's pursuing math. And I also think advocacy is super important because this is a problem that a lot of people see, but they don't recognize.
Hmm.
And what I mean by that is I spent a couple of days on Capitol Hill with Association of Women in Math, speaking with different senators, trying to get them to support different legislation that advocated for giving more money and more resources to women in STEM.
Mm-hmm.
And the amount of them that sat there and said, oh, I didn't know this was a problem, or I didn't even realize this, I didn't recognize it. It's kind of like, how do we expect people to advocate for something that they don't know is a problem?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I think that for me personally, that really hit hard. I was kind of like, in addition to supporting women who are pursuing the math route, I need to be out there informing other people that these women need their support, or these young girls need their support.
Yeah, that's true. That, wow, I didn't think about that. Like, even in, to your point, Capitol Hill, not knowing. I think some of that too is, well, it hasn't been my story, so I'm not back to that exposure piece, right? Like, I haven't been exposed to this because either it hasn't affected me or hasn't affected my kids, so I don't really know what that looks like, but that's so big. Legislation and getting them involved in such serious topics as this, of something that will impact the nation, you know, long term, is important. And I think also consistency of advocacy, right? Like, I think you mentioned, like, it can't just be the one, you know, woman and math. It has to be more, and it has to be something we consistently focus on and speak out on and really encourage all the way through. And to your point earlier, it's not just about starting in the early part of the career where they're, you know, you're a woman's in school, but like post that, like, because it's not something that just goes away. It's not, to your point, like once you get a degree, well, then there's a disparity once you get a master's. There's a disparity once you get a PhD. And then once you get into, you know, working, there's another disparity. So it's like every single step of the way is a marker, and every single step of the way there needs to be advocacy and support for women in these areas. And so, wow, it's really powerful when you said that, because you think about, well, how can I fix this one area? But I think everyone has a part to play, like you mentioned, in fixing this. And so I really appreciate you saying that.
Yeah, and I think it's important, as like an easy way to advocate is just to have conversations like you and I are having now. Mm. Anyone can have this conversation at the dinner table or in a car ride, just talking about it and recognizing that, you know what, there are less women in STEM fields than men. And just starting the conversation so that people begin to recognize it more, that it's not necessarily an afterthought or something that needs to be brought to their attention before they see, whoa, it's a problem.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, hitting it, being proactive. That's something that is lacking so many places right now. But I think the conversation starts here, and to your point, continues. And so I really appreciate your thoughts on that. And so as we're wrapping up our episode today, I always ask at the end of every episode my guests to provide the Technically Female Tribe a word to the wise. And so just to empower our community and to really have an encouragement for their week. And so Christian, what's your word to the wise for our community this week?
I'm going to go with a Maya Angelou quote that says, success is liking yourself, liking what you do, and liking how you do it.
Ooh.
And I think a lot of times we go through life trying to measure our success based off of what societal standards have been set. So this quote challenged me to kind of sit back and put away everything that I know from society, everything I know from cultural norms, and just sit back and be, what do I like? What would make me consider, what are my standards for success? So I really like this quote because I think it challenges people to look at success differently.
Yeah, because success looks different depending on who you're talking to and what's important to you. And I think so often we let, to your point, the cultural norms or the noise, the external noise, we allow that to determine what success is for us. And if you utilize that as your marker, you're going to fail every time, right? Like, I want a six pack, but it's probably not going to happen because I love ice cream, right? But does that mean I'm not successful in my like workout journey? No, it just means that success looks different for me, right? And I say that because it's something I've been beating myself up about, but nonetheless. COVID ruined everything, but no, nonetheless, it's really important that you understand how you measure success in your own personal life and early, because it could save you a lot of heartache. It could save you a lot of pressure, a lot of stress further on in your career when you kind of understand what that looks like to you personally.
Right. And you'll have better luck reaching success.
That is very, very true. No, that's a really good point. And so I really appreciate you, Christian, for participating and being a guest on Technically Female today and Tribe. I'm so excited to continue these conversations that we've been having every week on women in STEM and why it's important. And so if you're interested in being a guest on my podcast, always feel free to reach out to me at technicallyfemale@gmail.com. Until next time, continue to share the STEMinism.